Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, professor, pediatric nurse practitioner, and mom of four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to one of my favorite things to have with you guys. We're having an Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Day, where I answer the burning questions that are on your mind as we try as parents to navigate this world that seems like it's gone mad. Honestly, are you like me? Do you open up your phone in the morning? Okay, yes, it may or may not be one of the first things that I go for. I'm working on that. But you start scrolling through your social media, or you scroll through the news, and you just think, ugh, this is terrible. Oh my goodness, how do we even begin to parent like this? And then do you hear messages that are discouraging from other people whose kids are older, and they say things that are really helpful, like, oh, I'm so glad my kids are older. I'm glad I didn't have to deal with that. Good luck in dealing with social media and all of that. That seems like a mess. And you just want to say, yeah, thank you. That was so helpful and encouraging. I really appreciate that. But let me encourage you that you were born to parent for such a time as this. And God knew exactly which child He was going to put with your family. And He knows, even when you don't, that you are perfectly suited to parent or grandparent or godparent or bonus parent or whatever kind of parent role that you are serving. God is not surprised by any of that. And we hear a lot about the culture wars, and I want to frame some of these questions I'm going to answer with a little perspective shift as we start, because we talk a lot about fighting culture, and that is important. It is important. But when I think about it, and when I see kids, I see parents who become so passionate about fighting culture that sometimes, if we're really honest, we forget what we're fighting for. And we lose sight of our children, and we put them behind us because we're shielding them, we're protecting them from these things that are coming. But at the same time, then we're not looking into their eyes and looking into their heart. And the message is lost in translation that they don't understand we're fighting for them. And that is the most important message, because we are fighting to win their mind and their heart. Because culture wars, if we're honest, they're really fighting for their mind. They're fighting for the way that they think. They don't really care about how they feel. They just think about how they think and how they act and how their purchasing impacts are. And a lot of it comes down to money. But God made a God-shaped hole. I think about, if you're, you know, a 90s kid like me, I think about that old song about a God-shaped hole. God made a hole in their hearts that can only be filled by the love of parents. And we don't have any competition for that. So in these days where living at the speed of a smartphone is inescapable, and it's impossible to protect our children from every negative cultural influence that will come their way, that is a good defensive strategy. We need an offense. And I want to remind you today that in fighting culture, your best offense, your secret weapon, I promise you, is building healthy relationships with your child. Now, how do you start to do that? You listen in on this show where we're talking about 52 habits for healthy parenting. And every week we give you the basic building blocks of what you need to do to make sure that you are the healthiest, strongest, most emotionally balanced parent that you can be, and that will have great benefit. And these are things that are not life hacks. They are not secrets. They're actually very simple, but they are not easy. We're talking about things like reading your Bible and memorizing scripture and using that in your parenting. This is important. And a lot of times, you know, people will ask me about my kids, and I am so blessed because I have four kids. My kids are, I have two in college and two in high school, and my relationship with them is one of the very best things in my whole life. I have a good, strong relationship with all of my kids. All of my kids, praise God, in this moment, are following after Jesus. Now, I recognize they're not perfect. They're definitely not perfect, and I am not perfect, but this is something that we've worked on. We still have conflict. We still hurt each other's feelings. We still sin. We still make mistakes, but we recover more quickly. And I want to share that with you. And these are the ways that I have done it. It is long. It is slow. It is grueling. There is no immediate feedback. There is no immediate transition, you know, or transformation. That doesn't happen. But we can work to create a safe relational space in a world where relationships honestly seem unsafe. Think about their relationships on social media. Things can turn on a dime. Culture changes in a moment. What is acceptable and celebrated today is rejected tomorrow. What is rejected today is expected tomorrow. But Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And as parents, we can relate that to our children by being the same, by being steady, by being consistent, by being faithful. And parents, this is where I am going to be your cheerleader and tell you that what you are doing matters. Even when it feels like you're trying and you're trying and you're trying and you're getting nowhere, that is not true. I'm going to go back to my often used metaphor that parenting is like planting a pineapple. It takes 2 years for that pineapple to grow. You go out there, you water it, you put it in the sun, you see nothing happening, but you have confidence that the seed you planted will grow because planting and harvesting do not happen in the same season. So as we are creating a safe relational space in a world where their relationships are unsafe, we can influence their worldview by first viewing the world as they see it, and coming alongside them as a trusted guide. We can't tell them just, this is where you need to be. They don't know how to get there. And we have to build a relationship bridge. Yes, protect them from all the things in any way that we can, but empower them by saying something like, you will encounter challenges we don't expect. You will have roadblocks. You will have bad days. You will make poor choices. You will find yourself in a scary situation where you may not know what to do. But I want you to know this. I am there for you. I love you, and we will get through this together. As parents, we cannot succumb to fear-based parenting where we're battening down the hatches and running for the hills in a panic every time we hear a new threat, and there are plenty. Every single day. Fighting against culture has its time and has its place, and it is part of our strategy. But if you reframe your parenting perspective and make it your mission to fight for the heart of your child, to walk with them in relationship, to guide them through cultural change, parents, that is a mission we can win. And that is how we will change culture from the inside out. And we can find ourselves not exhausted by everything that is coming our way. Now, I was reading not too long ago that about 90% of us use Google as our first resource in problem solving. So when we encounter problems with our kids, our first instinct, if we're really honest, and I've done it too, is to go to Google, whether we're looking at how to treat a cold or what to do if you find a vaping device in your kid's room, you're more likely to go to Google, but fewer than 1 in 5 of us will go to a trusted friend for advice. Now, friends, something is wrong if we are more confident in our Google answer to life than walking in life with those who love us and people that we trust. So here's the thing. When we think about shame and stigma, that leads us to be slaves to image crafting. And that means we care about what our family looks like to other people. And we put pressure on ourselves to be perfect. And we worry about exposing our parenting sore spots. And let me tell you, I hear a lot of questions from parents who are struggling with things, especially with teenagers or older kids or adult children. It is socially acceptable for us to all sit around and laugh about potty training, and we can share our struggles and we give each other sympathy. But when we say, hey, my adult kid hasn't talked to me in 5 years, that's not something we can say. That is something we don't want others to judge us, and we do judge. And not everyone needs to know everything, but we need to be fully known by a few. And I think that it's really important as we're navigating these tough issues that you need 5 people in your life. I've talked about this before. I'm going to tell you again until all of you have all 5 of these people. I've always said you need a village to raise a child, but here are 5 specific suggestions to cultivate that village, to build a tribe around you so that when trouble comes, because we know that in this world we will have trouble, but we can take heart, not only because God has overcome the world, but because He's given us the grace of salvation and He's given us the grace of people to walk through this life with. So here are 5 people. So I'm going to ask you a question for a change and ask, do you have these 5 people in your life? As I walk through them, I want you to think specifically about them. And if you want to take it up a level, label them this in your phone. Go in your phone and remind yourself that this is a resource you have. So many times for me as a pediatric nurse practitioner, I see parents who let things fester for so long. You see problems and they'll say, you know, well, how do I know if my kid is depressed? Or how do I know if my kid is vaping? Or how do I know if my kid is not making good choices in their relationships? And I would tell you, you know, you absolutely know it. You have that spidey sense. You have the wisdom of the Holy Spirit. You know something is wrong and you may not know exactly what it is, but you're just afraid to ask about it. You're afraid of the answers. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to act boldly for the sake of your child, for the health of your family. And these 5 people can help you do it. First of all, you need an intercessor. That is someone who you can easily and comfortably ask to pray for you and your family. With confidence, they will do it. So I want you to think, who is that one person you can text at any time or any place and ask them, say, hey, will you pray for me? And it's not a, oh, why? What's wrong? What's going on? What is happening? That this is a person who will just pray, no questions asked, and just say yes and pray for you on the spot. If you don't have that someone, but you know someone who could do that, ask them to be your intercessor. Say, hey, I have watched your journey of prayer and I recognize you to be as someone, a woman, a man of prayer. And I want to know, if I ask you to pray for me, would you just pray for me? Would you just be a person who would pray for me? And that person should, if they do it, I mean, it is amazing. And so I know I have that. And let me tell you, my intercessor is actually my father-in-law. I can text him at any time, any place, call him, ask him, and just say, Dad, will you pray for me? And he will drop everything to do it. That's important. Second, you need a counselor, someone who, now that could be a technical counselor or just a counselor, someone who is a generous listener, someone who is dependable for wise advice, and someone who is willing to deliver hard truths. This is not the person who says, oh yeah, you should have said that to them. I can't believe they treated you that way. Oh, that is just terrible. Well, you were justified in what you did. That may feel good in the moment, but friends, that's not what you need. So I want you to think, who is your counselor? Who is going to tell you the truth? Let me tell you, for me, that is my sisters. they will tell me for sure. They'll tell me, you are wrong. You need to apologize. And now as my daughters have gotten to be adults, they can fill that role for me too sometimes, which is really great. But who is your counselor? Number 3, a healthcare provider. In this day and age, it is so important. We all have health needs. We all need to see a healthcare provider. And it's really easy to avoid that and just to say, nope, I don't know. There's a lot going on. I don't trust what the advice is that I'm getting. I don't like what they might say. Well, I have a lot to say about that, as you might imagine. So I'll talk more about that and the other 2 people that you need in your life. I'm also going to talk about FOMO. Yeah, FOMO. What is it? If you don't know, stick around and I'll tell you when it comes back, because it is something that is definitely impacting our teens. And I'll tell you what you can do about it when we come back. Little things can make a difference. A little note, a little smile, the small stone that David hurled at Goliath, and precious little babies. When you sponsor an ultrasound at preborn, your gift, no matter how small, makes a difference in a big way. Who will this little baby become? What giants will this baby slay? How about the mother who was spared from unspeakable sorrow because of you? You never know the difference you're going to make with a donation of just $28 to introduce a mother to her child through ultrasound, which doubles a baby's chance at life. All you have to do is take a few small minutes to make a life-saving donation. Preborn will take it from there as their network of clinics rescues 200 tiny babies every day and shares God's love with mothers. Preborn has a 100% charity rating, so you can give with confidence. Get involved today by dialing #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Day. This is one of my favorite things where I can just give you advice from my professor brain, from my hands-on nursing experience, and my heart as a mom to be a guide on the side. Listen, I am a mom of four. I know there are so many of you out there who have way more kids than I do, and some of you are in all different stages of parenting, but it doesn't matter if your kids are toddlers or teens, or if they're young adults or not so young adults. It is never too late to invest in your parenting journey. And I frequently give a shout out to grandparents here on this show. I will do no less here. Grandparents are so important. Let me tell you, your grandkids need you like I think no other generation has needed grandparents before. Parents are often stressed. They're trying to put food on the table. They're trying to keep a roof over their kid's head, and they are harried and hurried. And it is so nice to be able to have grandparents fill in the gap. And Gen Z, especially this generation of kids, they want meaningful conversation. And they are obsessed with all things vintage. And so take advantage of that and show them some vintage things. And actually, you know, my son, who is in high school, he loves wearing his great-grandfather's clothes, which I still think that is just amazing. And my kids may or may not call him Pawpaw when he does, but he loves it and takes it with a good sense of humor. But this is really important. Now, before the break, I was right in the middle, literally smack dab in the middle of telling you, answering the question, who do you need in your village as a parent? And let me go back just for a minute and remind you why I'm telling you this. This is so important to do before you encounter trouble. If you are trying to build a village in a time of crisis, you are not going to have the same kind of support that you have if you already have a resource network, a support group that you can activate. And if you've listened to the show for any number of times, you have heard stories from dozens and dozens of people who have encountered trouble in their families at the most unexpected times. And if you'll do a little investment now in building your own village, you will find yourself in a lot less trouble on the other side. So we've talked about an intercessor, someone who will pray for you. Do you have that person in your phone yet? We've talked about a counselor, as someone who will listen to you, give you wise advice. And we were just talking about a healthcare provider. Now, this is someone you trust with your life. And I can't mean that in any more literal sense. You need to have someone you trust who knows you, who understands your values, who aligns with that, who will respect that. And honestly, I think it's really important to also be somebody that you like, somebody that you enjoy being around, somebody that you have a good rapport with. And you're looking for someone who has a wise mind, skilled hands and a compassionate heart. Now, this can be really hard because you may have to visit with a lot of different healthcare providers, but ask the moms in your community, who do you see? Who do you trust? Who do you like? Go and look at the reviews on their websites and ask for interview appointments. You may not even know that you can do that, but you can ask for an interview appointment and just say you're interviewing different healthcare providers and you would like some time to meet with them either on the phone or by video conferencing or in person to ask them some questions about their philosophy of care and how they handle certain situations. You need a healthcare provider you like and trust, because when your kids encounter things, when they make risky decisions or anything happens, you need to know that that is somebody you can go to. That's number three. All right, number four is a friend. Now, this is someone I borrowed this phrase from Pastor Brian Haynes, someone who is wildly unimpressed with you. Someone who knows the real you, someone who has seen you at your worst, someone who knows the days that you stay in your jammies and, you know, are on the couch eating potato chips at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you can call them and say, hey, can I do laundry at your house? And they'll say yes with no questions asked. Who is that person who just is going to love you and be there for you, and you can call and you can just be yourself, and you can tell them this is what happened, and you can be honest, you can be vulnerable with them. You know they're not going to violate your confidence and they'll be with you. And number five, someone who is in the same boat as you. Now, maybe that's somebody who's going through a divorce. Maybe that's someone who has a child or a spouse, or you're a caregiver for someone with chronic illness. Maybe that's another sports mom or sports coaching dad. Maybe that's a working parent, someone who works outside of the home. Maybe that's somebody who homeschools and stays at home. Maybe it's someone who shares your cultural background or your heritage. Who is that person you need right now who is going to best understand, empathize, and support you in this life stage? That's who you need. So those are the five people. Here's the catch. You need to be intentional. Can you go back and name each of these people specifically in your life? I really want you to take some time to make a list and keep it on the notes in your phone. Like maybe make a little note and say, here's my village. Here's people that I can reach out to. And be intentional about talking to those people and saying, hey, I want you to know you're my friend. You're somebody I can call on. So those are things that are really important. And equally important, it's important for us to have, for our kids to have people as well. And I'll talk about that in just a little bit. But for right now, I want to move to talk about questions I'm getting about FOMO. Now, some of you are thinking, what in the world is FOMO? Well, it's an acronym, F-O-M-O, and it stands for Fear of Missing Out. It was added to the dictionary actually in 2013, and it has just endured. So much so that there's actually a research scale that I can use if I want to research the degree of FOMO. And this is one of those things, it really connects to the five people that we need in our village, because our kids are going to feel like they're missing out. And this happens a lot, especially as we go to the summer months and they're not in school and their days are not so structured and they have more time to scroll on social media. And before, you know, when we were growing up, we didn't know if somebody had a sleepover with somebody or if somebody asked somebody to go play football at the, you know, local high school, just a pickup basketball game. We didn't know any of those things until maybe way after. But now they're seeing those things literally happen live, because if kids are on social media, they can go live from that sleepover. They can go live from that basketball game. They can go live from that vacation that they've invited their friend to go on. And what it causes in kids is a literal anxious feeling, like a literal anxiety, a nervousness. They feel physically shaky inside and they hate it. They're embarrassed by it. They wish they didn't have it. They don't embrace it, but it is a reality. And they, what are they afraid of? Well, they're afraid of losing social standing when they're not invited to something. Or sometimes, even more complicated, maybe they were invited, but they can't go, or they choose not to go, and then they half regret it, and they sit in this, you know, kind of place where they're watching it play out on, live on social media, thinking, should I have gone? No, should I have not gone? Oh, gosh, okay, what's going to happen? Oh, well, so-and-so is talking to so-and-so, and am I going to miss out on that, and then I won't know, and then this friendship will change? I mean, it is a very complex thing, and maybe you're out there thinking, really? And I have to say, yes, really, this is a 21st century reality. Let me give you some actual scientific research on FOMO. 2/3 of people from the ages of 18 to 33, so this is Gen Z and millennials, say, yes, I have definitely experienced FOMO. I know what it is, and I have felt it. If you have a higher attachment to social media, it increases, actually pretty dramatically, feelings of FOMO. So what's the answer to that? Well, you know, I've said it before. Delay social media as long as you possibly can. But parents, here's the thing. We cannot, and I'm going to be really, really direct here. So I know this will step on toes, but I'm not going to say I'm sorry. As parents, sometimes we get an arrogance about us when we think, oh, well, my kid doesn't have social media, and we don't want to call it arrogance, and we wouldn't say that's our intention. It's not our intention, but we kind of get this smugness and feeling like when other people are talking about the troubles that their kids encountered on social media, we kind of just puff out our chest a little and give a little sigh and just think, yeah, not me. No, we don't have that problem. See, we don't allow social media in our house. Oh, well, see, little Johnny, he doesn't have a smartphone. We actually choose to be the parents and to not allow him to have that. And parents, let me just tell you in no uncertain terms, danger, danger, danger. This is a warning sign. This is a red flag, because pride goes before a fall. And kids can have access to social media. It is all around them, even if they're not on it. And if they're not on it, sometimes those social pressures can be even greater, because they have the added pressure of having to explain not having a smartphone. That's why it's so important when you make those decisions to give them confidence so that they know why you made that decision. They had some say in that decision, and they are ready with a defense, which is sad. They need it, but they need a defense and a confidence in that moment to say, I don't have it. But there is a phenomenon called shoulder surfing that is really common. So other kids who do have a phone, and if your kid doesn't have a phone, it can increase their curiosity, and they simply look over the shoulder of kids who are glued to these screens, from what we know in research, 8 to 9 hours a day. So I say all of that to say, and I was one of those parents. I really was, because I waited a long time for my kids to have social media. Way, way long time, like almost college age. And I waited for them to have a phone. Although my oldest and will still tell me, we can't believe you let the youngest have a smartphone earlier than we did. And yes, indeed I did, because every kid is different and I have no problem with that. But it's important to know that no one is immune. No kid is immune. All right, so back to research on FOMO. We also know that it creates low self-esteem and can actually trigger an identity crisis. FOMO also increases pressure to drink or to take drugs or to engage in other risky behavior. And they think, I don't want to do this. I don't want to try that, but I'm afraid of what happens if I don't. So I've shared this example before of saying, hey, come over to my house, and do you have any prescriptions in your bag? Well, hey, just throw those pills in a bowl here and let's pass it around and everybody take one and see what happens. I've seen kids who have done this because of FOMO. FOMO also distracts from schoolwork because it makes you have lower grades. You're distracted. You're not doing your homework. You're checking your phone in school. Yes, they can still do that even though they're not supposed to have it. You're checking your social media while you're driving because you're afraid. Like, if I drive from 30 minutes from this place to that place, well, there's a social thing that's going on here, a gathering that's being talked about. I might miss out. FOMO actually leads to something we call social media use disorder, which is basically just an unhealthy way that is clinically diagnosable. It meets clinically diagnosable criteria that we can see. So that happens. Now, as parents, I know social media is the great bane of our existence. We're all terrified and we want to say, let's just throw it away, make it illegal like they're trying to do in some states. But in reality, take a breath and consider this. Now, here's a warning. I'm about to give you some tough love and me here. Here's a tough question, but I want you to answer it honestly. Are you modeling FOMO to your family? Are you, as the parent, modeling FOMO? Now, I know a lot of you out there, you're yelling at the radio right now and you're saying, no, that's ridiculous, no. But let me ask you these questions. Okay, are you ready? Take a deep breath. It's going to be a little painful. Do you rush to buy the latest trend so that your kids won't miss out or that you won't miss out? Ouch. Are you the first person to be in line for the new version of the phone because you don't want everybody around you to have the new phone and you don't have the new phone? Or if it's the latest sporting equipment or whatever it is, do you carefully curate picture-perfect images on your social media so you aren't left out when your other friends are posting about summer vacation or Christmas pictures together? You don't want to miss out on those, and you see those family Christmas pictures and you're like, oh, I'm missing out. I need the Christmas pajama pictures. Oh no, I need the great Instagrammable family activity. I need to post that I'm making cookies with my kids today. Do you see your teens' friends or your kids' friends together? Or do you fume over why they weren't invited? You think, yeah, why weren't you invited? I can't believe that. Are you the parent that calls and says, why weren't they invited to this birthday party? They're missing out. I know that's hard and that's complex, but we'll just leave it there for a second. Do you make decisions with a rationale? What would they think of me? So you aren't ostracized because you think, oh, I can't make this. I don't know. What would people think? Does it make you anxious when the cool parents leave you out of their social gatherings? Do you drag your kids to do something they don't enjoy, but then you still post about it on social media? Or do you post about your kids and secretly enjoy the accolades and affirmation it gives you as a parent? I told you, that was a gut punch. I know. And honestly, I've been there. That is so tough. But before we judge our teens and our kids and dismiss their FOMO, we really need to take inventory of our own. I'll tell you how to do that when we come back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to an Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Day, where I'm answering your questions. And the question I'm answering right now is, how does FOMO hurt my kids? We're talking about fear of missing out. And if you stuck with me, good for you, because I just gave some tough love to you and to me, honestly, because I do have FOMO sometimes. I hate to admit it, but I do, and I have been that mom. I'll just confess right before you all right here, right now, I have been that mom who calls very angry that my child was not included and feeling like they're missing out. Ugh. So what do we do about it? Well, first of all, the most important thing we can do is admit it and just say, yes, I can see how I model that, and we can change our own behavior, which is always the most effective way to impact and influence our kids' behavior. The second thing you can do is to choose present over perfect. You don't have to have those perfect family moments. Not everything has to be perfect. Not every occasion has to be Instagrammable. And I'll tell you, just as a personal point of reference, some of the things that I have done are I've chosen to keep some of our family vacations private, and I don't post about them at all because it makes me think about perfection more than being present. I think about, let me make that perfect post and, you know, have this as a memory. And sometimes I post, but I'll just put the audience just for me so that I can go back and look at that. But I'm really concentrating more about being present with my family. Number three, oh, this is a tough one, friends, but I've told you before, ask your kids to call you out. Have a talk about FOMO and tell them, ask them to teach you what they know about it. Kids love to be in the position where they can share their new generational knowledge with us. So ask them to share with you about FOMO, about how they experience it, and ask them in what ways they think you have FOMO. But be prepared. They might give you another gut punch just like I did. But if you're brave, you can grow and you can heal and you can improve. So ask them to call you out when it looks like you're having FOMO and be willing to have a conversation about it. Honestly, evaluate your own social media use. And the best antidote for FOMO, the best cure, is intentional gratitude. So when you find yourself in that place where you have intense fear of missing out, then stop and tell your family that you're going to engage in intentional gratitude. It literally lowers your blood pressure, regulates your heart rate, and it guards our hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. We know this from Scripture. In everything, give thanks. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. So the fix for FOMO is saying thanks and giving thanks. And so there's so many ways that you could do this in your family. You can have a gratitude jar. You can have a round robin at the dinner table where you each say something you're thankful for. You can have a journal. You can have a sticky notes that you put on your refrigerator just when you think of something that you're thankful for that covers it. Think of a way that you can put thanks into your, to fix your FOMO. Now, then a lot of times when we have FOMO, it causes conflict. And parents will ask me, what do I do when we are in constant conflict, when we're fighting all the time? This is a question I get at any speaking engagement I go to. What do I do? So I am going to give you three lifelines to help with this. Three lifelines to help if you are weary from conflict with your kiddo, if you feel like you're just fighting all the time and you're tired of being miserable, here are three lifelines to help you. First of all, be intentional about choosing your battles. You may feel like you're fighting battles all the time because you're choosing every battle instead of choosing the most important battles. So I've talked about this before, but if you need to go back to it, or if you need it now, think about all the areas of conflict you're having with your child. Write them all down if you want to, but prioritize those top three. What are the top three things that you're struggling with? What are the top three things that are most important, that are non-negotiable? Commit to be consistent in going to the mat for those things every way, every time. And your child will understand in time that those things are the most important to you. And it gives them some direction. It gives them a lifeline because they know that if they can do those things, those are your trigger points. Those are the things that are going to inflame your emotions. And focusing on those makes it seem more manageable and less overwhelming. Because when your kids feel like a failure all the time, it's discouraging. And it makes both of you want to give up. So choose those top three priorities and let the rest go. You cannot fix everything at once. So this may be a season where you just let the messy room go, let the lower grades go, and create some grace and space to just breathe. Choose those battles and don't pick on the little things, because You know, our kids are much more sensitive to our criticism than we think that they are. And we can say one little thing and they take it so hard. So we need to recognize that it is a powerful motivator and choose when you are going to leverage that criticism, when you're going to leverage that heavy weight, instead of looking at it as a liability and thinking, oh, I have to be softer and be more considerate of my kids' feelings. No, just know that you have that weight and influence and choose where you want to use it. All right, lifeline number two, respond to conflict with active listening. When you get into conflict, do not yell. Do not lead with lecturing. You cannot lecture your way to leverage behavioral change. You cannot argue your way into right relationships. So I am encouraging you, try a radically different approach. The next time they tell you a barrage of complaints when they are having a conflict, let them have that little emotional release. Tell them, I'm interested in what you have to say. I really want to listen. Create a boundary that it has to be respectful. You have to be respectful. I understand you're angry and you can be angry, but you must deliver this respectfully. And ask them, what do you think I'm not understanding in this situation? What am I not seeing? How am I not hearing you? Listen with your face. Make your hands empty. Keep a neutral facial expression, as hard as that is to do. And if they say something that makes you angry, don't respond immediately. If you just feel like you're about to go off, then tell them you need some space to think about it. And you'll come back to them later when you've had some time to think about it. Say, thank you for sharing this with me. I need my emotions to cool down. And give them a time frame. Say, I'm going to go take a walk for an hour and I'll be back. I'd like to think about this overnight and set a time tomorrow to talk to you about it. That is important. I'm telling you, it can be a game changer. You might just shock your child into silence if you don't lead with lecturing, and you may be saying, oh, but Jessica, you don't understand. Yes, I do understand. And you might feel like you need to tell them all these things and they don't understand. But here's my question for you. If you've been leading with lecturing and you feel like you've done a lot of lecturing, how's it working for you? Is it making that behavioral change? Probably not. So consider trying something different. Cultivate curiosity and respond to conflict with active listening. All right, number three, circle back intentionally when your emotions have cooled. Help your children name and claim their emotions by first naming and claiming yours. Parents, so much of our parenting is about what we do. So you can say, hey, earlier I was frustrated. You were disrespectful. Let's try again. I'm going to try to not be frustrated and you try to be respectful. Okay, I'll try to be patient. You be respectful. Those emotional outbursts, listen, they literally impair the executive function in your child's brain. Emotional outbursts is like a short circuit. And you have to understand, they do not have the capacity to be rational until that little outburst creates its full circuit. And they can't communicate rationally. And you might be expecting a response they are not physically capable of giving. So try even sometimes maybe having a text conversation or writing a short note or even drawing a picture if your kid is really little, where you can each think about what you're saying. Take time to reflect. And once you find common ground, move that conversation to an in-person one. So listen, give yourself grace and space to grow and learn in whatever season of parenting you're in. And instead of picturing each battle as a defeat and having this, okay, we're fighting, I'm losing, instead look at it as a plant that you're watering with expectations of growth. So each time there's conflict, hey, that is growth that is happening. You're just moving them a little over to the sunlight. You're using a little weed killer. You are using a little plant food. And thankfully, I can grow plants. I can grow kids much better than I can grow plants because my sweet mother-in-law, she tried to give me a tree the day my oldest daughter was born, thinking that it would grow alongside her. And it would be so great because when she was older, she could look at this tree tree and it would be as old as she is. Well, I killed that tree in 2 weeks. I cannot grow anything, but I have been much more successful in my parenting. So I will take that, and then I will just enjoy all my mother-in-law's plants. But listen, in this season of conflict, the opposite side of this, you've got the warrior parent who's like, okay, you know, you want to fight, we're going to fight. Then you've got the parent who will just say, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And they'll immediately back down. Whatever you want, okay. Parents, we have got to find a place in the middle where we find confidence, even if we don't feel it. And I heard, I don't even remember which guest it was. I used to say, fake it till you make it. But now I say, faith it until you make it. Just have faith that God will fill in those empty spaces. And so I wanted to share with you an article, actually, that my daughter wrote. She is in college. She is a journalism student. And she wrote me a message about I'm sorry. And she is actually one of those people who just struggles with saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And that is a lot of times what I see in parents, where they're just the bond of your relationship is so fragile that you don't want to inject any conflict because you have had that little taste of closeness with your kid and you think, I don't want to upset that apple cart. Parents, that may be an immediate fix, but it's causing long-term damage. And it might help in the moment, but it's going to hurt you down the road. So let me share this message from my daughter, and it may help and resonate with you. And I'm going to read it to you as she wrote it. I'm sorry. I say it all the time, clarifying my order with the barista, asking my professors to help with a certain topic, telling my roommates to move over when I need to use the oven. But the thing is, I don't even really know what I'm sorry about. They're just two words that have completely infiltrated my daily vocabulary. How often do we feel the need to unnecessarily apologize, as if asking anyone for anything presents some tremendous challenge to their daily life? We feel bad when we're not completely self-sufficient and, dare I say, actually need something because we can't do everything on our own. There is definitely a time and place to be sorry. Some of us, including myself, have a hard time apologizing in conflict when the words elicit genuine meaning and warrant being said. In that arena, there are definitely areas in which to improve. The apologies I so often find myself giving are those that stem from my own insecurities and intimidations, not ones rooted in the sincere need to say, I'm sorry. I fear what other people might think of me when I ask them for help or encroach on the space or time they might be selfishly hoarding. What I've realized is that when I apologize so frequently, I undermine my own existence before I even give anyone else the chance to. I invalidate what I feel and need before someone else might shut me down. Maybe it's some coping mechanism for the rejection I've experienced in the past, or maybe it's just a bad habit I pick up in situations where I lack confidence. In situations where our first instinct is to quickly apologize, let's take a step back. Evaluate what's happening. Is this really a situation in which we need to be sorry, or are we just asking for normal help? Are we apologizing because it's an appropriate step in conflict resolution, or is whatever we're about to say simply the logical thing to come next in a conversation? In my journey to find new filler words, I try to tell myself that if I wouldn't mind completing an action or answering a question for someone else, I shouldn't mind asking them to do it for me. Because at the end of the day, we all need people. And as much as my independent heart would love to believe it, I can't do it on my own. We're going to have to ask for help. Whenever you're tempted to give a meaningless apology just because the situation is uncomfortable, remember that what you need is important because you are important. Instead of saying, I'm sorry, thank the other person for help, kindness, and understanding, and change your internal narrative so that what was once seen as a burden becomes part of the joy that is found in community. I'm not sorry. I'm thankful for everyone around me who offers a willing hand and a listening ear so that I might learn how to become just that for others. So parents, I encourage you to have confidence, say sorry when it's warranted, but stand firm when you need to. And listen, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face to shine on you. And may he be gracious to you. And I'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.